Today, more signs of a broken property market. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, now this post covering finance and property news. In a classic at first slowly and then with a rush, we are getting more data to confirm the depth of distress and distortion in the Australian property markets. As the perfect storm for the two-thirds of people who own property with a mortgage or outright, and the third who from choice or necessity rent, as the combination of overvaluations, rising interest rates, worsening sentiment, and the federal budget's tax changes to negative gearing capital gains all arrive. The latest from our survey show that 53% of mortgage owners have cash flow pressures now. That's an all-time high. And those in the rental sector are even more exposed after a small fall last month as changes to government support and low incomes were offset by higher costs and rents. Actually, rental stress rose to 74.4% of those renting, just below the recent all-time highs. And we see continued pressure from higher inflation and costs and the flow through from the three rate rises. Next, we saw more confirmation of reduced borrowing power available to investors for existing property, down by up to 30%, and reduced capacity for owner-occupier owners too, thanks to the higher interest rates, as APRA this week reconfirmed there will be no change to the rate buffers because these serviceability buffers, they say, help ensure that recent new borrowers can continue to service their loans in the face of higher expenses and interest rates. So on Thursday, APRA confirmed that the mortgage serviceability buffer will remain at 3 percentage points. The countercyclical capital buffer will remain at 1% of risk-weighted assets, and high debt-to-income lending limits remain unchanged, allowing banks to lend up to 20% of new owner-occupied investment loans at debt-to-income ratios greater than 6 or equal times. In deciding to keep its settings steady, APRA considered the high degree of uncertainty in the operating environment and the impact that the shift in the economic outlook is having on risks too. Financial stability. Actually, on Thursday, Macquarie Bank analyst Carlo Caccio gave his verdict on recent events. Sales of new home loans, he says, will drop 30% in 2027, pushing housing credit growth down from 7% to 3.5%, and that would wipe 1% to 2% off the earnings of the banks in the 2027 financial year, and as much as 4% in 2028. And beneath all of this is the ceaseless drumbeat of intense competition for mortgages and increasingly deposits. Jarden Bank analyst Matthew Wilson said this is the year of the deposit, arguing that the free ride the big banks get from large volumes of deposits they don't pay interest, about 12% of total customer deposits across the big four, may be coming to an end as Macquarie and others continue to disrupt the deposit market by paying very attractive rates on transaction accounts. According to UBS analyst John Story, if the big four banks had to pay 3% interest on the $370 billion pool of non-interest-bearing deposits they hold, their cumulative earnings would dive by as much as 18.3%. If they had to pay 5% interest, earnings would fall by more than 30%. So the banks are also caught in the draft. And that means they're also probably overvalued. And talking of overvaluation, we should turn then to the auction clearance rates. The preliminary data released on Saturday showed a 54.5% clearance rate according to Catality's figures. And the final figure, which we publish later next week, will be revised down, maybe below 50%. With more results included, it's expected to drop to its lowest point since May 2020. Actually, our estimated true clearance nationally was just 39.3%. That's a record low over the same period. The Catality figures show the number of scheduled auctions is actually rising, with 2,681 in the week to Saturday, up from 2,328 a week earlier, but the total was down from 2,918 in the same week a year earlier, making it the second straight week of lower year-on-year volumes, according to Kataldi. Sydney's preliminary clearance rate, based on 731 reported results of 997 scheduled auctions, fell to 51.9%, though the true clearance, that's comparing listings to sold, dropped to 38%. In Melbourne, where the preliminary rate fell to 58.1% from 60.2% a week earlier, a figure later revised down to 53.3%, by the way, the true clearance was 42.3%. In Brisbane, with 201 homes scheduled for auction, a preliminary rate of 43.3% was reported, down from the previous week's 45.7%, and the true clearance rate was just 30.3%. In Adelaide, where 132 properties were due to go up for auction, they came up with a 65.3% clearance rate, which was the highest in the capital city, but still down from the 72% the previous week. The true clearance, though, there was 35.6%. And in Canberra, where 75 auctions were scheduled, the initial clearance rate was just 39.1%. That's the lowest since June 2019, and the true clearance was 33.3%. It's worth noting that for next week, Cataldi says there were about 1,250 homes scheduled to go under the hammer over the King's Birthday long weekend, rising to about 2,190 the following week. So the market is getting more difficult for vendors seeking to sell, while buyers are taking a breather to see how things shake down. The collapse in auction clearance rates comes amidst a rise in new listings, which are tracking 8.9% above the same time last year, again, according to Cataldi. The weak demand and rising supply continues to place downward pressure on dwelling values, with Cataldi's daily dwelling values index continuing to decline, actually pretty much everywhere now, and falling most in Sydney and Melbourne. And the final data point that was revealed this week came in an RBA Bulletin article, which revealed that the share of housing investors aged over 60 has surged in Australia over the past 20 years, while the share of younger investors has retreated. This is something which I've been talking about for years based on our surveys, so it's nice to finally see it being formally recognised by other research. RBA economist Alexandra Michelsen used new data covering the full population of housing investors in Australia that provided, quote, a materially richer view of housing investors than had previously been possible. They should have used my data. It's been around for a long time. And yes, I've seen all the trends already. Our analysis showed that between 1999 and 2000 and 2022 and 23, the share of housing investors aged over 60 surged from 12 to 28%, and the share of housing investors aged 50 to 59 lifted slightly from 24 to 25%. But for younger age cohorts, it's retreated. Over the 20-year period, the share of housing investors under 30 years of age fell from 9 to 3%. And for 30 to 39-year-olds, it dropped from 26 to 18. And from 40 to 49-year-olds, it fell from 29 to 25%. And overall, the median age of housing investors in Australia increased from 45 to 51 years over the past 20 years. So the research showed that housing investment had become actually more skewed also towards higher income households over the past 20 years. And the report said several factors explain the large share of high income housing investors in Australia. It said rising property prices lifted entry costs, making it harder for lower and middle income households to purchase property, and tax concessions also played a role, it said. The research also showed that the share of investors who owned multiple properties has increased in the past 20 years, while the share of investors owning a single investment property declined. Between the year 2000 and 2023, the share of housing investors who owned just one property fell from 80% to 70%, while the share of investors who owned two properties increased from 15 to 20%, and the share of investors who owned three or more properties increased from 5 to 10%. And actually, in my data, I see some with 20 plus properties, and the number with a very large pool of properties also rose. Overall, the share of investors owning more than one property increased by 7 percentage points over the past 20 years. Those with multiple investment properties own about half of all investment properties. The RBA paper was published on the same day as the Albanese government introduced its first tranche of the budget legislation into Parliament, and the government's bill included the controversial changes to the taxation of housing, including the capital gains tax discount and negative gearing, which were revealed in its budget 2 weeks ago. Treasurer Jim Chalmers told Parliament when introducing the bill that his proposed reforms to the taxation of housing would make it easier for people to buy their first home. Opposition to the budget changes actually have centred on the wider changes to CGT relating to startups, trusts and shares, leaving the reforms aligned to property almost unquestioned. The RBA data confirms the distortions, which helps to explain why home prices have risen so much faster than wages, making affordability shockingly bad. Opposition leader Angus Taylor has vowed to repeal the government's housing reforms if he becomes Prime Minister. Labour's negative gearing changes will hand over housing investments to multinationals and foreign pension funds, he said in his budget reply speech. Labour's increase to the capital gains tax will discourage the investment Australia needs to grow. But the truth is, we are just in the foothills of a potential property correction, and unlike previous cycles where the government sought to stop prices falling, it seems they are now changing their tune. Housing Minister Claire O'Neill, she who before the election spoke about sustainable home price growth, now says suggestions the government's proposed tax changes could knock 10% off the price of homes are overblown, with Treasury expecting only a mild impact on price growth, adding that if prices did fall sharply, it would not be due to the proposed changes to negative gearing and capital gains tax. Treasurers model the impact of our tax changes on house prices. There is a mild affordability impact. For that, we get 75,000 rental households into their own home and a fairer market for housing in this country forever. Treasury forecasts in the budget showed that house price growth would slow by about 2% in the short term. Others suggest significantly more. Westpac, meanwhile, has been forecasting the budget will significantly affect the housing market, with a third of new investor activity expected to fall off and total housing turnover expected to drop by a fifth. The bank's IQ team expects dwelling prices to stall this year, with a risk in the near term of an air pocket where prices drop sharply due to uncertainty over the tax changes and higher interest rates. Now, I worry about the 200,000 or so 5% deposit recent first-time buyers who may slide into negative equity, and the potential rental hikes incoming as investors seek to recoup some of their increased costs. But this medicine is absolutely needed and well overdue. Overall, our updated scenarios, in the best case scenario ahead, sees maybe a 4% rise in average national prices over 3 years. But the most likely base case is for a drop of around 10%, which is in line with some of the other bank analysts. But there is a scenario also with a 30% fall in the worst case if we see higher interest rates for longer, a prolonged Middle East conflict, and continued higher inflation. So the question now is, just how broken will the property market become? And which types of property in which locations will be the worst hit? I suspect high-rise will suffer as more supply arrives and defects emerge, while standalone property in the lower quartile will be less impacted, while falls at the higher end of the market are already significant and counting. More about this in tomorrow's rant with Edwin, our property insider, but the sleeper, of course, is migration. If migration remains strong, that will provide some underlying support to price momentum. If, on the other hand, migration becomes weaker, especially significantly weaker, this could actually be another downward force. And if you take account, as I do in my modelling and scenarios, of lower migration, that helps to explain the downside risk too. Another reason why I suspect the government will continue to talk about lower migration, but not necessarily execute on that thought. Bottom line is this: we are in the foothills of a significant potential correction. How deep and how long is an open question, but very hard to see much upside at the moment. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.